I am with the Office 365 Customer Advisory Team. I was with MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services, for a number of years. I spent most of that time actually developing on SharePoint and Office, using our traditional development methodologies. I started developing on Office and SharePoint back in the earliest days of SharePoint's existence. Before that, I was an independent consultant. I did a lot of development work, building websites, and so have a lot of history in the previous ways that people have used SharePoint and used Office and extended it. Overview of the Office Developer Platform. We believe in you being able to write your app once and run it everywhere that Office runs. So you may have heard me talk about that a little bit in the keynote. So before, our traditional development models very much put your code in our worker processes. So there's a couple of different disadvantages to that. There's a great advantage that it's very, very flexible and very powerful. Some of the disadvantages of that are that when we port Office to these other platforms, we would have challenges from our side of having to rewrite the dev extensibility in each one of those platforms, and some of those platforms are different. And so rather than take that approach, we decided to go to a more industry standard, JavaScript, CSS, HTML approach, so that wherever we expose Office, that platform is going to support those standards. And so it gives us the ability to not burden ourselves with a lot of engineering overhead just to get the platform there, and then also gives you the ability to use more industry standard methods. And so maybe you've got developers in your organization that aren't Office developers or aren't SharePoint developers. How many people in the room have learned CAML? Anybody know what CAML is? Yeah. Sorry about that. Very powerful, very, very interesting approach, and allows you to very quickly write applications in SharePoint, but was very specific to SharePoint. And so when you would bring a general web developer in, or you would bring somebody that wasn't familiar with SharePoint in, there was a very, very steep learning curve to learning how to build apps in SharePoint or how to build apps in Office. And with this new approach, while it is much different than what you have traditionally seen or grown to love or hate about SharePoint and Office development, we really believe that actually doing this in an industry standard way not only gives those developers the power to build the apps that they want, but new developers who have actually maybe just come out of college and who are used to using services like REST and things like that, this will be much more familiar to them. They don't have that very, very steep learning curve. Now, we also understand that you have invested in learning how to build for Office and for SharePoint in the past, and so some of you guys will actually be the ones that have the steep learning curve over the next year to year and a half as you get ramped up onto this. But we believe that those skills that you'll develop are portable across not just Office, but to other development projects as well. So when we think about the services that we're providing from the Office Developer Platform, you may or may not have seen we've released some Office 365 APIs. Right now they're in preview mode. We hope to take them out of preview mode very soon. This really is a way for us to abstract away all of the very SharePoint-specific or Exchange-specific methods that you've used in the past to talk to us, our SOAP web services, if you were doing client-side development, and move towards a more generic model that uses REST APIs. You can still use the CSOM APIs that we have in SharePoint, but we believe that this is a much better way to expose those services. So we have a very basic set of services now. We have the Azure AD apps, we have Office Graph, and then we give you access to the Files API, so where your files are stored in OneDrive, also your mail, calendar, contacts, Link has actually come on board recently, and your social data in Yammer. We want you to be able to run these apps everywhere. And I know that everybody has heard that before, right? Write your app once, run it everywhere. I think there was that was a tagline a long time ago for Java. Now, the difference between what they did and what we did with the .NET framework and what we're doing today is that we don't have to build virtual machines for all of these different platforms and get in a race with the platforms and upgrade those as we move forward. We're using industry standard methods to do this, which these platforms will inherently support because they are just part of the web. And so we believe that those investments that you're going to make here are going to bear a lot of fruit in the future. So as you heard in the keynote, we really think about our apps in two different ways. We have what we call our contextual apps. And so your users are, move this a little bit. Your users are working inside of SharePoint. They're working inside of Office Client. You know, they're in Word. They are in Outlook. I spent a lot of time before coming to Microsoft building intranet systems and building productivity applications for businesses. And the way I always looked at it was the fewer clicks that your users have to get to the data that they want or get to the application they want, the more productive they're going to be. I know personally I get frustrated when I'm working inside of Outlook and I think, where is that link to that presentation I did last week? And then I have to navigate out to some SharePoint site or, you know, maybe I'm working inside of a line of inside of Outlook and I need to send some invoice information to someone and I have to get out of Outlook and I have to navigate over to a line of business application. I have to look up that invoice maybe, grab the file, come back to Outlook and attach it. If you think of the number of steps that entails for an end user, it's not productive and it's frustrating to a certain extent. And so we believe that these contextual applications give you a very powerful tool to bring the information that your users need to where they're working. And so if they're inside of Outlook and that's where they spend most of their day replying to emails, responding to emails, and you have line of business systems that you want those people to interact with, apps for Office, apps for SharePoint is a great way to expose that functionality into the Office surface so that they don't have to leave that environment, navigate to a different place, get that data, and come back. So it's a very powerful tool that you have in your tool belt for building applications that increase your users' productivity by surfacing it where they're working today. So again, that's your apps and your UI. So you build the app, but you surface it inside of Office or you surface it inside of SharePoint where appropriate. It is in context. So again, your users don't have to break out of their workflow where they're at in that particular document or in that particular email or in that SharePoint site. They can bring that line of business data to them in a meaningful way, greatly increases their productivity. And so when we think about the reach, many of you may have noticed that when we first launched Office 2013, apps for Office only worked in the Office clients for 2013. Now we have started to add support for apps for Office in the Office Online, so the web browser versions of the Office client, and those work across any platform that has web browsing capabilities, which is actually really, really cool. So if you can't run Office on the local machine, you can actually still give your users the ability to interact with those apps. And then you'll see us investing more and more as we launch Office on other platforms. So you've heard we launched Office for iPad. This is the method with which we will be able to surface your apps in that environment as well. So it's industry standards based. We know that the iPad's going to have a browser that supports HTML5 and CSS and JavaScript. So the investments that you're making today to surface those applications both within the Office client and within SharePoint, as we extend the reach of Office, you will naturally be able to piggyback on that and your app will run in those environments as well. So we're not there yet. We've got a lot of goals to get apps for Office into all of the endpoints that we surface. But typically the way we do it is we launch the platform level, and then the apps support comes in behind it. And so if you look at our Office 365 roadmap that we talked a little bit about in the keynote, you can see kind of the ones that we have in development, the ones we're thinking about in the future. So again, can't reinforce this enough. This is web standards. You know, I was a guy who learned how to twist and bend SharePoint in ways that the product team never envisioned. And you had to very much understand the SharePoint way of doing things. And it did not translate to maybe your Java developers or your PHP developers. You were very much talking different languages. And so while, again, there's a learning curve here, this is a learning curve that's worth it. It's worth the investment because you are moving more towards an industry standard development model that is going to be more applicable to folks who maybe don't develop on Office and SharePoint. I've worked with a large number of customers moving from our traditional app model in SharePoint to our new app model, and we've been able to extend their line of business applications that were written in Java, written in PHP, written in Ruby, and extend those to surface them into this new model without writing a whole bunch of proxy code and a whole bunch of stuff that runs in .NET or runs within SharePoint. So. You know, maybe you've got a development shop that's got, you know, 10 or 20 folks that focus on Office and SharePoint, and maybe the vast majority of them are overworking on these line of business systems. You'll be able to much more efficiently and productively use those development resources in this environment as well. So we're really seeing that start to take off, and I'm pretty excited about it. So they're scalable and safe. How many people in the room have gotten woke up in the middle of the night because their developers deployed something to their SharePoint farm and it went down when everybody came in the next morning? Aha, got a couple guys in the back. Yes, I've gotten those calls myself. You know, the traditional way that that we did development in SharePoint and Office also, your code ran inside our worker process, and it was very, very powerful. You could get to all of those APIs. You could even get to things that were marked private if you were crafty enough and could use reflection. And you know, we saw very creative developers doing lots and lots of very creative things. The problem was when they would crash the W3WP or they would crash the Office, then everyone blames Microsoft. SharePoint is a bad thing. It's not stable. And 9 times out of 10, when I would engage with a customer and try to unwind what exactly was going on, we would find out that it would be their customizations that were actually causing the problems. And so that doesn't look good for us. It doesn't look good for you. We need a more scalable, secure, and safe way to do that development. And we believe that we've done that with the Office 365 APIs and with the development model that we have in Office and SharePoint. I like to tell a story. So I actually moved to the engineering team about 4 years ago. And as I said, I came from our field where I twisted and bent SharePoint in ways the product team never envisioned. And I think part of the reason that they brought me to the engineering team was actually to keep me close so they could keep an eye on me and make sure that I wasn't continuing to do that in the field. And for the first 6 months I was in the engineering team, they made me the primary liaison for support between the SharePoint team and our support organization. And so I would get all of these really nasty customer escalations that had to do with development and had to do with extensibility. And I'll tell you a story about a large, large enterprise customer who builds computers in the United States, one of our biggest partners. And they were about ready to throw SharePoint out the door. They said, "We are so frustrated because very, just intermittently, sometimes workflow events won't fire, and we think it's SharePoint, and we're really mad, and Microsoft, you need to fix it." And I actually had to fly down to the customer 2 or 3 times. I had escalation engineers. We were attaching debuggers into their production environment to try to figure out what was going on. It took us 8 months, 8 months of some of the smartest people that I've ever worked with in escalation services, and 8 months of debugging and tracing through that code. And you know what we found? They had an event receiver that was running somewhere. When it would have an exception, it was disabling event recursioning. When it would have an exception, it would put that thread back in the thread pool without turning event recursioning back on. And if, by chance, a workflow picked up that particular thread, no events would fire. So it was their code, their custom code, and them not being able to catch those exceptions well that made SharePoint look bad. And that's just one story of the pain that we can go through and the time that we spend, we being Microsoft and you being the customer, of trying to debug and troubleshoot these things. And so while it was very, very powerful, I truly believe you will find it much, much easier and to isolate where the problems are in your apps with this new model, because you're using API surfaces that we trust, that we expose, and you'll get exceptions back and you'll say, oh, I did that wrong. Or, you know, we'll see those things in the Office side, that those API calls maybe are being too aggressive and things like that. So it gives us a nice way to be able to draw the line between your code and our code. And make you more empowered to figure out what exactly is going on. Because attaching debuggers onto the SharePoint worker process in a production environment is a pretty pretty scary proposition, especially for large systems. So the other thing about these are they are accessible. So they can be accessed from any device with a web browser. So back to the earlier points I made, because we're using a standards-based approach, and we know that any modern device is going to support those types of standards, then we believe that this is a much more accessible way to get these apps out. All right, so we talk about building sites. Sites can be customized and themed with apps or a few clicks in the browser. SharePoint sites are built using web standards, so it makes them easy to customize with industry standard web design tools. So before, you had to crack out SharePoint Designer. Hopefully you weren't doing that against your production environment. You were doing it over here in some pre-production environment. You'd wrap those things up and you'd deploy them into your SharePoint farm as a farm solution that you would then create sites off of. So there was a lot of lead time, a lot of trust you had to put in your developers that they were doing those things well. And now you can use these APIs to actually do that, which is a better approach in the longer term. And we can talk at the end about why we think that's a better approach. Sites can also adapt their experiences based on the user. So I can't reinforce this enough. We built this for the cloud. We have learned a lot. You saw in the developer keynote where he talked about the different iterations of our service as it has grown up from Microsoft Managed Services to BPOS, or Business Productivity Online Services. And then after that, we had Office 365. Each one of those progressions was an order of magnitude scale difference in how we actually run that service. And as many of you know, I mean, maybe you have one SharePoint farm, or you have two SharePoint farms, or you have a few users that use Office Client. One or two people can support that. That can be supportable in that manner, even using the traditional models. But when we think about running a million tenants in our cloud, has anybody here ever done any development against our BPOS service, our dedicated service traditionally? No. Okay, so we used to allow full trust code into that service, and it would take 6 to 8 weeks for them to submit the code, for us to review it, for us to figure out if this is safe to put on our server farms. That is not something that we could do at scale with a millions and millions of tenants in Office 365. So it slows down the customers when they want change, and it slows us down, and it's pretty resource intensive. And so we built this for the cloud based on those learnings. And you'll hear us over and over say the cloud, the cloud, the cloud, the cloud, and you'll hear us say Office 365. But I do not want to trivialize it. If you are going to continue to run on-prem, you're going to run in your own private cloud, so to speak, all of these approaches will work for you as well. Okay, so you can set up this app model to run on-prem. You can host your provider-hosted applications or the back-end that you use for these apps for Office and apps for SharePoint. You can host those in an on-prem IIS server or in, Ruby or Python, whatever you want, in your own data centers. And so when you hear us say cloud, don't immediately just think that's only for somebody who's in Office 365. I have seen customers, we actually have a case study that's coming out soon, hopefully it lands in the next couple of weeks, that are running in an on-prem environment that have saved 25% year over year by moving their solutions into this app model. And you might think, well, how did they save 25% year over year? all of the benefits that I talked about before of the why we built the app model apply to you. You get to accrue those benefits as well. So we can upgrade the cloud. We're doing it weekly or biweekly or monthly now. We're rolling updates consistently. And as long as we make sure that those API contracts are valid and that they still work, you can rest assured that you can upgrade that SharePoint environment, so to speak, without having to do all that rigorous and onerous testing of what your developers built that was running in our process. So that would really slow people down. You know, the IT pro guys say, hey, we want to go put Service Pack 1 on our SharePoint farms. And the developers go, well, we have to go develop all, you know, validate all of those applications. And then they would find, you know, API differences that we changed in the full trust code model or something like that. And then they would have to go rewrite those applications. And so it would really slow down the ability of IT to actually upgrade those services without having a big investment from those developers, especially if you've spent millions and millions of dollars actually building that stuff. You don't want to have to spend 20-30% of that every 6 months to actually go validate it again. And so we've seen a lot of really great improvements from both the agility side, so developers can deploy more quickly without the IT pros getting really freaked out, and then the IT pros can actually have more confidence in their upgrades that they're not going to break the development because we are using the API contracts that are more standards based. So hosting freedom, again, just because we say cloud does not mean it has to be our cloud. You can gain these benefits in an on-prem environment as well. So if you're thinking about, you know, diving in and customizing Office, and, you know, maybe you should think about doing it this way rather than the traditional way that you've done it so that your IT pro guys can kind of break loose of that three-legged race with us. And then reusing logic and access. So building apps that can share logic and code with other web-hosted solutions. So that was very hard before. You would bury a lot of the business logic maybe in your code for the Office app you're building or for the SharePoint app that you're building. You know, we would see some folks that would be advanced and would abstract that stuff out into a, you know, service-oriented architecture, but it was not the norm. But because all of your logic lives outside of our worker process, it lives in your provider, it gives you a lot more ability to reuse that and kind of forces you into thinking about a service-oriented architecture because that's how the app model works. So when we think about modern app development, so we think about it in kind of two ways. We've got our products and our platforms, okay? So we think SharePoint, we think Office. And then on the right, we've got our services and our data. So we've got data that's locked up in a lot of our different products, and we can access those through the Office 365 APIs. Some of those that we're calling out there maybe don't have full support today for the app model, but they will be coming. This is the future. All of our products will be looking to move to this model. So the investments that you make here now with Office and with SharePoint will help you in the future with our other products as well. And then in the middle, we've got where you can actually build your apps, where you take the services and data that we provide through our services. You can extend them into our products and our platforms through the endpoints. You can also build your own apps that merely just talk to our APIs. And so it's a very flexible offering. It's a very flexible way of looking at our stack as opposed to the traditional models. So. And then one of the really cool things that we have now that we have not had in the past, which we're finally starting to see folks really kind of grasp, is the app catalog and the store. So you inside of a business, or you inside of a you know, maybe you're an ISV and you develop apps, how did you get that out to your end users before, to the people who are running SharePoint or the people who are running Office? You had to find some way to evangelize to them that this app existed. The App Store is actually a very powerful way of doing that. So there is the public App Store, so you can deploy apps out there for anybody to consume publicly. So that's a very a really cool thing from a marketing perspective. So you're not just standing up your own website and figuring out how to go market yourself to a billion Office developers. you can naturally get your app into the place where they're looking for apps. And so that's not something we've had before, and we're really seeing some great uptake in that. And then the app catalog can actually be run on-prem as well. So you can deploy your apps for Office and your apps for SharePoint into your corporate catalog and surface those to your users within your organization. And so maybe you've done a really cool integration with your finance system, and all those people in finance, you want to make sure that they understand that that app is there. You can publish it to your corporate catalog, and then they can discover those things as you build them. And so it's a very natural flow for the users to go find and discover both your apps and third-party marketplace apps that may help them get their jobs done. So what's in it for developers, right? We're developers. Why should I, you know, I've been doing this a certain way for the last 10 years. I've built on SharePoint. I've built on Office. I've built even on Exchange. Why would I want to learn this new way? You know, you've heard a few of the things that I called out before. The same code works in cloud and on-prem. I cannot underscore that enough. I have worked with customers both on-prem and in our Office 365, both our multi-tenant and dedicated service, and we were able to achieve a much higher level of code reuse there. So that's very, you know, who here likes porting an app from one platform to another? Yeah, I've never had anybody raise their hand on that. So a lot of that duplicative work that you do, you will be able to get out of. Again, building the marketplace apps. And so, you know, I've seen some folks at enterprise companies who have built some really, really cool apps for internal use. And now they're starting to think, well, maybe other companies could benefit from this as well. Maybe we could monetize this through the marketplace. And so that's been interesting to watch. So, you know, Rich Diz, who's speaking in the other track, has actually himself released a whole bunch of apps into the marketplace, and he's just a guy writing those things on the side. And so if you've got, you know, some passion and the ability, we've got a great vehicle for you to get those apps out into market and in front of folks. It is a more flexible model, so you do have some additional possibilities. There are a number of restrictions that we do need to think about, and we'll talk about those in some subsequent sessions. If you're interested, I've got one where we're talking about transforming your code from full trust to the new app model, so we're going to dive deep into kind of how you should approach that, how you should think about that. And then you can use standard .NET development tooling. So how many people here got frustrated when, you know, maybe they wanted to use some of that new really cool stuff in the .NET framework V current, and it wasn't available in SharePoint, like when we had Link? Yes. And you'd go, why Microsoft, are you not giving us the most recent .NET framework? And then they would send me flame mails and really get mad at me because they couldn't do Link queries or whatever it was that they were trying to do. Just being blunt and being open and being honest, that's a lot of engineering effort for us to keep current, right? I mean, we're building our product on top of that. And so that's a lot of engineering effort for us to go add, say, you know, .NET Framework 10 or whatever pops out next week into SharePoint 2010, right? And we don't see a ton of value in that. The really cool thing about this new model is you can use whatever .NET framework that you want in your provider-hosted application, right? You can use the current, the latest. You can start doing MVC and all that stuff. Our platform doesn't inherently have to support that below the hood. So you don't have to wait on us to add that level of support in order to use those really cool new features. I've been just absolutely floored and amazed at some of the stuff that both the .NET team has come out with recently and the pace of their innovation, as well as the Azure team. You know, we don't want to have to get into a race where we're building on top of them and we're having to spend all of our time just integrating their new features into our product. We would much rather just allow you to use those products and then interact with our API surface. So that I have found to be a very interesting angle to this that I hadn't anticipated. So a little bit more about the app model development. If you know general web development, you also know Office 365 development. So if you've become accustomed to doing REST and, you know, all of those really cool, you know, JavaScript framework-y kind of things that are floating around out there today, those are things that you're going to be able to benefit from in our new development model. And then those are the things also that are very portable concepts across a lot of the new development spaces. And so you'll be able to have conversations with other developers in your organization with the same terms and the same approaches, rather than you trying to explain to that Java developer what CAML is and why you need a list definition and how to package that up and deploy it. And a lot of times their head rolls back and they just walk away because they don't want to deal with that, right? You're the expert in that. So I want to take this this time to actually do a couple of demos. I'm going to use this as an opportunity also to show you some really cool stuff. So we have definitely heard the let me just duplicate my screen actually so that that'll be a little bit easier. Here. Yeah. All right. So we have heard a lot of folks say, well, I used to do it this way. I used to do it this way in Full Trust Code. I'm familiar with doing development against SharePoint and Office using these other ways. How in the world am I going to approach that with the new app model? Okay? And if you're the kind of guy, I'm a dev, I'm like, hey, give me the code. Give me the code, give me a little bit of description of what it is that this code is, and then I can deconstruct it, I can figure out what you did, I can look at the pattern, I can look at the approach. So if you're that kind of dev, and you're not afraid to just go tear apart some code, I have a great resource for you. We have an entire team of folks, myself, Veza Yvonen, Frank Marasco, Bert Jensen, you guys may have read their blogs and seen the stuff that they're talking about. We started engaging with customers very close after the release of 2013 and started working with them to understand, okay, this is what you built before, now we need to move it to the new app model. How do we do that? Okay? And so what we're doing is we're publishing in this github.com/officedev. PNP, which is patterns and practices. We're doing this in a very agile fashion, and so daily, weekly, monthly, you'll see new samples and new things come into here. That where we've gotten questions from the field, we've gotten questions from our customers on how do I approach this? I've got this scenario that is quite common. How do I approach that in the new app model? This is exactly what this patterns and practices project is for. For those of you that are familiar with patterns and practices, in 2010, how's the polite way to say this? It was architecturally elegant. It was interesting. I thought it was overkill, right? A lot of times developers would look at it and they would say, wow, that's just all this plumbing and all this stuff. There's a lot of value there, but I don't really understand it. and so we took a little different approach with patterns and practices this time. We've started out with a lot of very scenario-specific samples. So I'm going to actually just dive into this folder structure. So I'm supposed to use this time to show you a little cool app, but I actually think you'll get more value out of this if I show you how to navigate around this GitHub repo. So when I'm here, I can go to samples, and we've broken this down into very, I call them small and snacky samples, so very small things. How do I do alternate CSS and site logo? How do I apply branding to my site using the new app model, right? How do I do custom CSS, deploy a custom theme to a web? All of these very small little things that you may want to be able to do in a targeted fashion, that's what's in our samples folders, okay? There's actually some really cool little workaround stuff, like our app parts are iframes, and so they're not very responsive from when a screen resizes. So we came up with this app script part pattern. So you can use the app model, you can use all the client side properties, but it doesn't use iframes. And so we found some creative workarounds to some of the typical limitations to the app model while we work with the engineering team to try to overcome them. So if you're encountering those challenges, this is a great resource and a great place to go. So every one of these samples does have a small markdown page, a little readme file. it talks about, you know, maybe there's a video here, you know, what it applies to. There's some general stuff, but it is not full-blown MSDN documentation, but it's enough to actually get you up, get you running, and help you get started with the sample. And so the samples themselves are, again, very small, very core. You can see that there's just a growing number of them. Some of the feedback that we've got is, hey, there's so much there, I don't even know how to find what I'm looking for. We're working on that. We're actually going to launch something after TechEd next week in Europe off of dev.office.com that is going to make these more discoverable, searchable. So I look forward to that coming out. That's a good problem to have, right? And I will say that I'd say 9 out of 10 of the development questions that I get today, when people ask me, hey, I used to do this in Full Trust Code, 9 out of 10 times nowadays, I can point them to a sample and patterns and practices. Do it this way. Think about it this way. And it's a very great way for us to just innovate quickly and get it out there. Now, if you are the kind of person who wants to wait for MSDN documentation and you want the full-blown ebook that's going to go with how to do this, we have that as well. We're publishing solution packs on MSDN, but it takes our content publishing folks a pretty good chunk of time to take what we've developed, give it to them, and then get those solution packs published. So we only have like 2 major scenarios in our solution pack now. There's hundreds of samples in here. So if you want to wait for the MSDN documentation, great. You can do that. But if you want to get started today and you're not afraid to tear code apart, this is a great resource. So you saw samples. We also have scenarios. Scenarios are more thinking about end-to-end, an entire scenario that you want to accomplish, and then taking those approaches from the samples and putting them together to show you how they can be used together. So it's kind of one step up from the little small targeted samples. And then we have solutions, and there is really some gold in here. I'm really looking forward to having some more of these solutions. But if you look, we've got PowerShell commands, so people who are not .NET developers, they're IT pros who typically use PowerShell. We've taken a lot of the common stuff that we've put in here and we've created PowerShell commands for that. So IT pros, that was actually a community contribution, and so this is one of the great things about us using GitHub. We're allowing the community to come participate in this as well. But if you look at like provisioning, so everybody needs a site provisioning process in SharePoint, and maybe you are gonna operate with some of it in the cloud and some of it on-prem. Here's an end-to-end solution that shows you how to do that using the app model without deploying full trust code into your farms. And so this one's actually a great one. You could spend a whole weekend kind of tearing this one apart, but it's a really great resource for you. So we also, if you look at the bottom here, we have a little bit of a discussion. We've got our GitHub project wiki, and then we've got a Yammer group. So if you have questions, you go in here and you maybe get stuck or you can't find your way around or you've got a question, you think, hey, you guys don't cover this in here, we've got a Yammer group, and myself and Veza and Bert and Frank, all of us monitor that Yammer group. The community is growing as we move forward, so don't be afraid if you don't think that this gives you what you need. Feel free to just talk to us in the Yammer group. Let us know what you're looking for. Maybe we can steer you in the right direction or tell you an alternate approach to do what it is that you're looking for. So I look forward to that conversation when you guys start tearing this apart. And again, there's an FAQ at the bottom. So, all right. The apps for Office and apps for SharePoint sessions will actually show some real demos, but I wanted you guys to get the idea there. All right. All right. So we want to talk a little bit about the apps and the marketplace licensing process. So before, everybody would just roll their own licensing process. Maybe your licensing process was, I just trust you, Mr. Customer, that you've got this many seats and that's how many you've used, or you wrote some custom licensing process to enforce, number of users that are using your app. How many people here are ISVs? You've got a couple. Okay, so this is probably a little more concern for you guys in this space. Enterprise developers, you typically just develop something and you're deploying it for your entire organization. But once you actually develop your app, you submit your app to Microsoft for the App Store. We actually have, it goes into the marketplace at office.com or SharePoint.com, depending on which type of app it is. And then users can discover those through the storefront, so through the marketplace storefront, all right? Wait, and then the app can bypass the SharePoint store for in-house development. So just because, so there are restrictions in our marketplace, like we're not going to let you deploy an app that requires full tenant level permissions. We don't have a real great way of doing that right now in a trusted and safe way. So we don't allow that. So just because you look at our marketplace and you look at our store and you say, but I need higher levels of permissions, there are ways that you can sideload these apps. There are ways that you can do that. But it's going to require the IT admins to be a little more involved in the installation process. We actually think that's kind of a good thing for right now because, you know, I don't know how many IT admins you know that'll just go click, 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 yes, yes, yes. And, you know, they inadvertently granted some nefarious third-party app access to everything in their SharePoint environment. We see that a lot, you know. So making them go through that process to actually sideload that is not a horrible thing. There is some setup involved, but we can. There is. So when you look at it, don't think there's too many restrictions and I can't deploy the app that I want. An approach that I've seen ISVs take, which is actually fairly interesting, is they deploy some reduced feature set app into our marketplace store just to kind of show people what it can do, but then they have a full-blown app that you need to actually reach out to them and get installed out of band that maybe has greater permissions and greater functionality. And so maybe you need to look at that mix and match to where you get the visibility in the marketplace, you get the free marketing, so to speak, in front of the user's eyeballs to say, hey, you know, here's my workflow product and it's great and it can do all these things. But then if you have a premium version of the product that you actually have them reach out to you and license once they've decided that the one in the store is totally awesome and will probably do what they want. Okay, so the user or the manager of the IT farm actually assigns the user licenses and uses the apps which can be hosted in SharePoint or be provider hosted, and then the user actually just runs the app. So there is a licensing process there. You can enforce, you know, if I'm going to sell you 100 licenses, then the admin can go decide which 100 users can actually run that app. And so there is a control mechanism there so that, you know, you sell. How many times have you seen this? Enterprise customer buys 100 licenses of app, and then you go back in 2 years later and find out everybody in the 10,000-person organization has been using your app for the last 2 years. That's sometimes a little frustrating. So there is some nice controls there. All right. So for folks who are familiar with developing on Office in traditional ways, developing on SharePoint in traditional ways, you want to think about those contextual apps as the replacement or the new version of what you've traditionally done. We have this whole new world of these Office 365 APIs, which I'm really, really excited about. Let's talk about them. So people like to build device apps, right? Devices have proliferated. You saw in the keynote how many devices are out there, how many different platforms. There's tablets, there's phones, there's, you know, Windows 8 PCs, there's, you know, Macs, all of these things that people are using today. And rather than make or mandate that all of your users use some particular specific piece of device, maybe you want to write an app that works on the phones, that has an Android interface, has an iOS interface, has a Windows 8.1 interface, because your users just love, you know, Apple phones or whatever it is. Rather than force them to change the hardware they're using, bring your app to them, right? It's a whole lot lower bar. They're much more, they're much happier with that approach. And so that's where the idea for the Office 365 APIs were born, was for that world. And so we're just going to flip through this a little bit. One of the real powerful things, so the development that you do today using the Office and SharePoint app model, you will notice that they have a consent framework. So when you install the app, the user gets prompted, hey, this app is going to access your SharePoint site. It's going to need this level of permissions. Do you trust this, right? And we had that for SharePoint and we had that for Office. Well, when we stepped back and we looked at it, we thought, well, why do we want to go build another consent framework for Exchange and another consent framework for Link? Why don't we just build a common consent framework that we can use across all of the products in Office? And so this, I like to look at the Office 365 APIs as an evolution of the app model that we had for SharePoint and for Office. And so if you are experimenting with SharePoint and Office development in that app model, Office 365 APIs are not going to make you throw that away again, right? We are committed to upgrade the auth model that SharePoint and Office apps use to use this new common consent framework and to use this new security architecture. So diving in today and learning how to develop on that is not going to be wasted effort. So we have heard the feedback, hey, Microsoft, you're on your third new app model in three releases, and now here's number four. What am I going to do? I just want you to understand that the Office 365 APIs are an extension and an evolution of what we released in 2013. So don't think it's Sandbox V2 and that you're jamming yourself in the corner. How many people actually used the Sandbox solutions? One, two, a few. How many people loved Sandbox solutions? Not a single hand. All right, yeah. Sorry about that one, too. Great idea, but poor execution in some areas. All right, so when we think about the Office 365 APIs, we have APIs for Active Directory, so you can get in and you can query and update users and groups, which is actually pretty interesting. You can get into Exchange, which was actually really cool. If you think about the typical user scenarios, you know, maybe you've got an app that does some processing on files and stuff, but actually needs to go write reminders maybe into somebody's calendar or something like that. That was very difficult before, and you would end up having to store usernames and passwords to call the Exchange Web Services, which is not something we would ever recommend people do, but they did it anyway. And so this really allows us to use one consent method, one authentication method, and get access to resources across all of these products. So it's really, really powerful from that perspective, and you can kind of break out of what you considered, you know, the traditional ways of developing for SharePoint and interacting with our other products, and think about Office 365 as a holistic platform that you can develop against. And so I'm seeing some really, really cool use cases. I've actually, for the last 6 weeks, been working with a bunch of ISVs that are building apps for Office 365 APIs, and we're going to announce a bunch of them at TechEd next week. So anybody that's going to be in Barcelona next week, we're going to have some really cool stuff to show off and some scenarios that work across SharePoint and Exchange and OneDrive for Business. So this is not a full feature set as far as all the APIs that we had in SharePoint. Now, you can still call CSOM, but the REST APIs are somewhat limited in the Office 365 space. We look to improve that over time. Okay. One of the hidden gems of the Office 365 APIs and the Discovery Service, if you're interested in this, there's some really good deep dive sessions later over the next couple of days. But one of the things that I found was super, super cool was this doesn't just work against Office 365, all right? So somebody who has a Microsoft account, a consumer account, and maybe their OneDrive is actually the consumer OneDrive and their calendar lives in Outlook, you can use this same API surface against our public consumer offerings and Office 365. And so you as a developer don't have to care. Is that a corporate user with an organizational ID, or is that a consumer user with an with a Microsoft account? You don't have to care. They give you the email address. We have a discovery service that says, hey, here's the endpoints that host this person's calendar, this person's mail, this person's OneDrive, right? All their files. And you as a developer don't have to care if that's consumer or if that's business. And so if you're writing an app, an interesting app that I saw that works across both, it was a travel and booking registration app. And so consumers could use it. They could build out an itinerary. They could find their travel destinations, where they wanted to go while they were visiting it, and then they could generate that and save it into their OneDrive. And so they were able to build this app once, and then corporate users could use it and store it in their OneDrive for business, or and then also interact with their Exchange calendars to put all those itinerary things on there. And then consumer users could use it as well. And so they didn't have to build two versions. They didn't have to figure out that auth dance. And so I personally find that to be very interesting from an ISV perspective. If you're going to build apps that kind of bridge that divide, we talk about consumerization of IT. We need to be able to consumerize these APIs in that same method. And so that's why you'll see, sometimes you'll look like our files API doesn't support metadata, okay? Well, that's because OneDrive Consumer doesn't support metadata, right? This API actually has to have a common surface area that works across both of those sets of services. And so as these other services add capability, we'll add that into the Office 365 APIs. So don't throw rocks at me when you look at it and say, but I can't get to my metadata in my OneDrive site, in OneDrive for Business. There are ways that you can get to it, but you need to use the old traditional CSOM methods to interact with that. So, but it is really cool. How many people here have ever tried to divine what a user's My Site URL is so that you could go interact with it? Oh, nobody. Okay, that's a very interesting challenge. This abstracts that away from you. So you just get their email address, and then the service tells you this is where their OneDrive site is. This is how you go interact with it. Here's the URL to it. So pretty cool stuff. So we talk about the SharePoint client APIs. They do work. With the Office 365 APIs, there are a few areas where the new Office 365 APIs don't work. But as I said before, now those areas in particular are the user profile service, people search, and I'm forgetting one. There's one more, and I have to look at my notes. But we are adding support for that. So if that's a blocker for you today, you're looking at O365 APIs, you can revert back to calling the CSOM methods if you need to, but we will work to make those methods work with the new auth method. So we're committed to that, back to my conversation before about how this is an evolution and a progression, rest assured. If you aren't familiar with how we implemented, so you look at CSOM. CSOM is client-side object model, so that's a traditional development pattern for interacting with SharePoint. It's actually really cool from a perspective of I can do batch requests, like I can tee up a whole bunch of things I want to do on the server, and then I can do execute query. Before, we had a very limited client-side object model surface. Now, in 2013, we actually have a fairly wide client-side object model surface. We did that because we didn't want people to have to revert to full trust code. We wanted to unlock those scenarios through the client-side object model. We also added support for REST and OData. We also added support for REST and OData. Now, the way we did that in the product is actually we have this new thing called underscore API. And so if you navigate to any SharePoint site and then in the URL you put underscore API, that's a common endpoint that serves both the CSOM and the REST. So we have the same code that lives behind that. We're just surfacing it in two different ways. Now, before, I would always have this conversation with folks about, well, should I use REST and should I use CSOM? And the way that I would always look at it and explain it to them was, in CSOM, I can do batching. So I can batch up a bunch of requests, I can send it to the server as one kind of large, chunky payload, and I could get my response back. So it's more chunky, it's bigger, but it's less chatty. It's not as many calls, okay? And REST was very easy. I could make very targeted calls and I could do operations, but if I'm doing a whole lot of things on the server, that can get very chatty, so to speak. And so you kind of want to think about what the pattern of calls are, what your latency is. You know, you're doing a new model where everything's coming from the client, and so you want to think about that. That was my old stance. As of SP1, it's actually great. We added $batch support to the REST APIs as well. It's not quite as verbose as and full-featured as the batch support for CSOM, but it's close, and we're getting there. And so the old model I used to use of explaining CSOM is chunky and REST is chatty, does not necessarily equate nowadays. And so you can see that we really are investing in the REST interface as being kind of the future. We really want to get that thing to parity with what you can do on the client-side object model, and then we want to move it forward even more. So if you're brand new to this thing and you don't have a lot of investment existing in client-side object model, I actually suggest you start looking at the REST APIs, looking at the client programming methods that we have for the REST APIs, because they're very industry standard. There's a lot of folks using REST. You'll look at samples across the platform, other platforms as well, where they use REST. Whereas CSOM, it's kind of this crutch. If you've been a traditional SharePoint developer and you've moved into the client-side object model, because it looks very .NET-ish, it's very familiar to you. There's some familiarity there that may be some benefit to you. But if you don't have that and you don't need that comfort level, then I suggest looking at the REST APIs and thinking about doing that. We also have some really cool stuff out there. If you're building Android apps, if you're building iOS apps, we've got SDKs for those out on GitHub. And so it's an accelerator that allows you to actually kind of abstract that plumbing of how to do the OAuth dance with Office 365 and allow you to build those apps very quickly. And so that stuff's out on GitHub as well. We've open sourced it, so we have a group called MS OpenTech who actually stewards that and manages it and does the development on it. But if you're really crazy about getting a new feature, they do take pull requests from the community. So we've seen a couple come in. It's actually been very interesting to watch that develop. And so trying to embrace that open source mentality where it makes sense and where the community wants to go. So you'll see that more and more, even our patterns and practices stuff. We're putting it out there open source. If you know community says, hey, this is the right way to do it, and we in engineering agree, we'll take that pull request. So it's also a great way to get your name out there as that rock star developer who added to the Android SDK or added to the patterns and practices guidance. So I want to talk a little bit about the tools. The next session, we actually are going to spend quite a lot of time talking about setting up your development environment for Office 365, but this is going to be kind of a high-level overview. How many people here who've done SharePoint development carry around that big, huge, virtual machine-laden PC? Yes, I did it. I hauled those things through airports for years and years and years to all of my client sites, and I felt like I was hauling a bag of bricks with me. I can actually happily develop all of the development that I'm doing in Office 365 today on this Surface Pro 3 now. That's the only machine I brought with me to Moscow, and I have been able to do everything I needed to do. So my back is very appreciative of not having to haul that 30-pound laptop through customs. So you do have a developer template. So the developer template actually allows remote development against your SharePoint farm. And again, you can do this in the cloud. You can do this on-prem. It has kind of the way I like to look at it is it has its own way of deploying your app into that site collection so that you don't have to go through the whole corporate catalog process and get it approved in order to be able to see how it works. So developer site collections are your friend. If you're working just at the site collection level and you're developing an app, that's all you need. You need a developer site collection and you need Visual Studio. When we think about remote development, before, you would either give all of your developers these big, huge, beefy 30-pound laptops, or you would set up some virtual machine infrastructure and then give them each a VM. You don't have to do that anymore, which is attractive from a cost perspective also. You know, lighter resources required on the development side, on the client. Lighter resources required on the hosting side if you're taking the VM approach. And so using these developer site collections and Visual Studio on your laptop, you can get quite far in doing apps for Office and apps for SharePoint. So I want to talk about a few resources before we close out and take questions. So first, there's dev.office.com. We understood that MSDN, while it is an awesome resource, it's very confusing. It's very hard to find the things that you need very quickly. And so dev.office.com was born. So this one is very much targeted towards folks developing against our new app model and wanting to get started on both the SharePoint and Office apps and also the Office 365 APIs. We've got some really great innovation coming on dev.office.com in the next couple of weeks to even add more resources. But it's very targeted towards why, how do I migrate? Because if you've got an investment in traditional code development, then again, how do I migrate that? It's got a lot of code samples. All of our patterns and practices work that I showed you is highlighted there, and there's actually going to be a whole new section that's devoted to patterns and practices soon. And then we've got links into the community, so the Yammer groups that we and the engineering team actually listen to and participate in, as well as the Stack Exchange and other places that we listen. User Voice is where we take requests from the community for things maybe that are missing in the APIs. And so dev.office.com is going to be your friend there. There is blogs.office.com/dev. So here's where we talk about Office 365. We have dev-focused announcements. We also publish the Garage Series videos. So there's videos out there. Rich has done them. I've done them. There's also a weekly podcast that Jeremy Thake actually runs, which is quite interesting. He gets folks like myself and the engineering team to sit down for an hour and just talk about what we do and how we look at things. And so as you get time, that might be something that's interesting. I was on the one a couple of weeks ago and said some controversial things that ignited a lot of conversation. So back to reinforce what we talked about before. I showed you guys patterns and practices, but here is the Office Dev PMP, so aka.ms/Office Dev PMP. You can also just go to GitHub, like I said, github.com/Office Dev, and you can get to all of it. So this is app model patterns for common full trust scenarios. There's over 30, and it says 30 plus. It's actually, I think, 90 plus at this point. This thing is growing like wildfire. It's very interesting. It has become the most liked, forked, and followed repo in our GitHub repo for Office development. So there's definitely an interest in the community for how to move what they've been doing to the new model. So. And then you can contribute. So we are taking pull requests. You will notice that it actually says, hold on before I move, it actually says AMS. So anybody who saw Office AMS when we used to do that, that was actually myself and Veza just published that because we wanted to get stuff out real quick. That actually grew up into patterns and practices. So if you followed us on the AMS side, it moved to patterns and practices. That's just a branding. It's the same type of approach. And then there's tons of code samples. So we've got code samples out there on that same GitHub repo for Android SDK. There's the entire Wikipedia app for Word that is developed for Office for the Office client. The whole source code for that is actually out there on GitHub. And so I'm really excited to see us in the development teams actually start to publish these things where you guys can tear them apart. And then coming soon, we've got a campaign manager for Android and expense manager. So basically all those really cool demos that you see us do at those conferences, we're putting those things in GitHub so that you guys can tear them apart. A lot of times folks would say, hey, that demo really looked cool. It was kind of smoke and mirrors, though. I want to see that code because I don't think you can actually do that. We're putting our money where our mouth is, and we're publishing that stuff out on GitHub. So pretty cool to see. And then we want your contributions. I mean, if you've got great ideas, you know, our engineering teams are super awesome at building the platform. You guys actually know the stuff that you need to solve and the problems you need to solve. And if we're not solving it for you, we'd love to interact with you and take contributions from the community for this stuff. So, all right, having said that, we've got about 5 minutes left of the session, and so I want to turn it over to questions. So maybe things that I haven't touched on or questions that you have specifically. I'll just open it up to the room. Yeah?
Actually, continuing the comparison between client object model and REST, mm-hmm. Well, what I find in the client object model is that it's strongly typed. You can just find the methods I want and see what parameters are, but there's no such thing for REST. Is there any tools which can circumvent these limitations or something?
Yes, so we actually have new client libraries. Now, they are on the Office 365 API side, but we do have new client libraries that can help from that perspective. And we have those for Windows, we have those for Android and for iOS. And so those can help. But yes, kind of back to my point that the client-side object model has some advantages, and it is very familiar to those people who've done .NET development. But we are making investments in that space, and I think Rich or Israel are doing a session on that later. So interested in your feedback after you see that one. All right. Any other questions? We've got one in the back.
Will you show us some Hello World maybe application on this Nemo model?
Right now?
Oh, maybe, or...
Yeah, I mean, so... Yes, so there is a session for Apps for Office. There is a session for Apps for SharePoint. Both of those have very quick, simple demos. If you want me to be brave, I got 4 minutes. I could go pull down one of these patterns and practices things and F5 it. You want me to do that? All right. Let's do it.
If it's so easy, maybe not.
It actually is easy. So just to show you that there's no smoke and mirrors, I got 4 minutes. I was not prepared to do this, but I am going to do it anyway. So this is where I've synced. Oh, you guys, I need to duplicate my screen again so you can see what I'm doing. And so I have gone through. So in the next session, we're going to talk about how to set up your development environment and stuff. So I'm not going to dive in and explain what I'm doing. I already have a developer tenant. I already have all the stuff I need in Office 365. I'm going to come in here to samples, and I'm going to pick one. I'm going to do... let's see. I'm going to do app script part just because I think it's actually kind of cool. What this sample does is it actually deploys, using client-side object model, it deploys a custom web part into the web part gallery. And you say, well, why doesn't it do an app part? Because we're actually working around the limitations of the app part. So when you look at one of these projects, you'll see a couple of things. You'll see the manifest that goes into SharePoint, and you'll see the app script web part. So it's going to ask me here to log into my developer tenant. And I am going to log in. This way it knows how to talk to my developer site collection. I want to make sure that we have the right one here. Yep, okay. And then I'm going to F5 it, and then I'm going to show you some code. All right. And so here we go. Drum beat, please. Alt F5. What this is going to do is it's actually going to package up the application. It's going to deploy it into the site collection for SharePoint. And then it's going to launch the application into a startup page. Every one of these samples actually has, it's actually pretty cool. We give you a scenario walkthrough. So we'll show you the couple of different scenarios there are. We'll talk you through what it's actually doing. And then you can dive back into the code to actually look at it. Drum roll. All right, so now I need to sign in. And sign in. And the first thing it's going to ask me is, do I trust this app? Okay? Of course I trust it, because it came from patterns and practices. Why would I not trust that app? So I trust it. And the next thing it does is it actually sends me to my application screen. Now, the very interesting thing, look where this is running. Oh, it's running on localhost. So again, back to my comment that it can run in the cloud, it can run in Azure, it can run on your local machine if you want it to, although I don't recommend that in a production environment. But you can see that the app script part usage, it describes the scenario. It says, we're going to add an app script part to the host web. I'm going to run it. Da-da-da-da! I'm sure this is the fact that it's communicating all the way across to the United States to my developer tenant. Oh! Darn it. All right. My 3-minute demo blew up. But I swear to you, this actually worked in Miami. I'll have to figure that one out. But that's the high level. I can pull the actual code itself and show you what it's doing if you'd like. But there's a ton of little smart samples in there. And I am... Come on. Yeah. And stop.
Stop.
To right, right.
Yeah. Huh? All right. But fairly straightforward, and sorry, my demo blew up. I wasn't planning on doing that one in this session, but...
It's now easier to develop for the server.
The server-to-server auth setup and all of that trust relationship, is that what you're talking about? Yes, there is a... We have updated the articles, so we definitely got that through the support feedback that is onerous and hard to set up. We have published some new articles that are kind of a step-by-step guide of all the different things you need to do. There's about 37 steps in that. The great thing about Office 365 is we do all of them for you, but it is possible to set up. It is challenging, but it is possible.
Yeah.
You do need to involve, there's DNS set up, there's cert exchange, there's a lot of stuff that you need to set up. It's easier because we do those 37 steps for you, but it's possible to do it on-prem. But we definitely got that feedback from a lot of ISVs that were sideloading apps in on-prem environments that we need to make that easier. We're taking that into account for the next release. So, yeah, I can. If you come find me at Ask the Experts tonight, I can actually show you where those resources are. All right. Well, thank you very much, folks. I ran a few minutes over, but hopefully you got some value out of it. Thank you. Oh, it's lunchtime too, so I don't want to cut into everybody's lunch.